Confessions of a Troll by Artemis Greenleaf. Chapter 1, Feast, wherein our hero plans to attend a rite of spring and a feast. It was just a simple computer prank. How could I have known that it would almost get us all killed? And by us all, I mean me, my 6 brothers and sisters, our parents, and Mo the cat. I stood in front of the dresser mirror trying to adjust the world's ugliest clip-on tie. The clip was bent, but if I got the tie tack just right, I could cover the grease stain on this used-to-be white shirt. I hated hand-me-downs. Sometimes I wished I was an only child. Big, grey and white Mo sat on the dresser, staring off into space. He hissed, launched himself halfway across the room, and scrambled down the stairs at top speed. Crazy cat. Kai, a male voice called me, somewhere in the house. What? I shouted. Who are you yelling at, Kai? Miranda, my little sister, poked her head into the room. Whoever's calling me, duh. I don't hear anything. You're not hearing voices again, are you? Get lost, Miranda. She shrugged, and I heard her clomping down the stairs. I never should have said anything to her. What did I expect from a 14-year-old anyway? Only crazy people hear voices, right? And I'm not crazy. It started about a year ago. I kept hearing someone call my name, or whispering just behind me. Probably just Marcus and his bad idea of a joke. He's full of them. Knowing him, he'd hidden some gadget that makes noises somewhere in the room. Jerk. I checked my look in the mirror. Pretty hopeless. My oldest brother, Matthew, just turned 24. He was graduating from Emmeline Tech tonight. Then we were all going out for what my mum referred to as a celebratory dinner. In fact, Matt was the first one to wear this suit. I looked like a blue Sharpei dog, it being a husky size, and me being a slim size. But the suit wasn't the only thing that hung on me like a garbage bag. My parents had this obsessive-compulsive disorder that caused them to name all of their children so their initials spelled M-O-P, Mop. By the time my parents had me, there apparently weren't any normal names left. Who would stick a kid with a name like Mordecai anyway, other than my parents, I mean? I don't even like to think about my middle name. But I had the last laugh. About the only person who called me Mordecai was my mother. Nearly everyone else left off the Morder and called me Kai. My father didn't call me anything. He had a stroke last year, and he doesn't speak anymore. Actually, he didn't do much of anything anymore. Mostly sat around and watched the Discovery Channel. I heard Dad laughing hysterically downstairs. He did that sometimes. Just burst into laughter for no apparent reason. Mum said it had something to do with his stroke. Marcus? Mordecai? I need help with your father! Mum called from the living room. The tie wasn't going to get any straighter, so I gave up. Where are my stupid shoes? They were just here! It took almost 5 minutes for me to find them in the bathtub. No idea how Marcus managed that, but how else would they have got there? Idiot. When I got downstairs, Dad was flopped in his recliner and Mum was trying to coax him into the wheelchair. The right side of his body was mostly paralysed. He could shuffle along a little, but his right hand was knotted into a fist. The muscles had contracted and wouldn't relax, so his arm stayed pulled across his chest. Morgan, please get into the chair. It's Matthew's graduation. We don't want to be late. Dad shook his head. Come on, Dad, I said. You have to come. Marcus appeared in the kitchen doorway, chewing the last bites of a peanut butter sandwich. Wish I'd thought of that. We each took a side and lifted Dad into the wheelchair. He sighed. I pushed Dad's chair up the ramp into the van, with him muttering, along the way. Sorry, Dad, it's only an hour. And then you get dinner, I said as I strapped his chair down. Of course, he didn't say anything. I sighed. I couldn't help it. My dad used to crack jokes constantly. Most of them were terrible, but even the worst ones were better than this. Why did this have to happen to me? Him. I meant him. Why did the stroke happen to him? We were meeting Matt after the ceremony, so Mom and the most of the rest of my sibs, Miranda, Marcus, Morris, Monica, and Mike, hurried out into the door towards us. I got to ride shotgun, which meant I had to close the door after everyone else had piled in, because the inside handle was broken. I caught the edge of my jacket in the door when I slammed it shut, and almost fell over when I tried to step away. "Mordecai, stop fooling around. We're already running late," Mum grouched at me. I could tell without even looking that Mum had her lips squeezed together and a big wrinkle creased in her forehead. She did that a lot lately. She never used to. There was nothing to say, so I opened the door and freed the coat, then climbed into the passenger seat. Mum peeled out of the driveway before I even got my seatbelt on. I stared out the window. Tomorrow was payday. I'd have the last $50 for the new computer fund. It had taken over 6 months to save up the money, and it felt like Christmas Eve. Mum better take us to get it tomorrow. It just wouldn't be fair not to. Our computer was seriously old and slow. It took minutes to load a web page, and if anyone emailed photographs, that was it for the rest of the day. I knew we weren't going to be able to get broadband, but anything had to be better than that dinosaur. We stopped at the traffic light, where our street, Spring Willow Drive, met the main road. Mum drummed her fingers impatiently on the steering wheel. "Come on, come on," she muttered. As soon as the light changed, she hit the gas. I was still looking out the window, thinking about the new computer, when Monica screamed, "Mum!" Chapter 2. Grand Am Slam, wherein a fast car with a slow driver introduces mayhem and dashes hopes. Time suddenly became slow and sticky. My head seemed to be stuck in a thick goo instead of air as I turned to look. By the time I faced the other window, I could see the car, a black Grand Am with orange flames painted down the side. The driver had run the red light and was now rushing towards us in slow motion. I saw the man squinch his eyes together and brace against the back of the seat as he slammed on the brakes. The nose of the car pulled down. The tires smoked. I should have heard screeching, smelled hot rubber. Mum must have floored it. She almost got away, but the black Grand Am ploughed into the left quarter panel, just behind the wheel. The van spun back against the Grand Am, crushing in on the driver's side, then rolled to a stop a few feet past the other car. Time lurched back to normal speed. I didn't remember hitting the window, but I must have. The side of my head throbbed, and I rubbed it with my hand. There was a hard knot there. When I brought my hand down, my fingers were sticky with blood, and I shuddered as another memory of another time with blood on my hands flashed through my brain. The driver's side window was a concave spiderweb of fractured glass. Mum's forehead rested on the steering wheel. A cold fist squeezed my heart. I touched her shoulder. "Mum, are you okay?" She looked up at me, blood trickling down the left side of her face. Someone jerked open my door. I could see two other people at the Grand Am. A man in a green business shirt and black slacks looked in at me. "Son, you okay? Is anyone hurt?" he asked. I pointed to my mother. The man yanked out his cell and called 911. "Mum, Mum, are you okay?" Monica cried from the back seat. She sounded like a little bleating lamb, the way her voice shook. It almost made me want to laugh, even though I knew it wasn't funny. The man in the green shirt helped Monica, Miranda, Marcus, Morris, and Mike, and Dad out of the van. "You two stay there till the ambulance comes. Don't move, okay?" he said to Mum and me. A cop happened to be driving by and stopped to investigate. I knew him. Officer Malloy. He directed traffic until another policeman showed up a couple of minutes later. Then he started asking questions and taking notes. Until then, we'd been styling in a 10-year-old candy apple red van conversion with captain's chairs and mangy shag carpeting. The "if you see this van rocking, don't come knocking" bumper sticker just added to the class. Man, I hope I didn't see anyone I know tonight. Mum signed some papers, and the insurance and car rental guys lifted Dad into the passenger's seat. Marcus folded up the wheelchair and put it in the back. We got to the restaurant about 5 minutes before the dinner was supposed to start. It took almost that long to wrestle Dad out of the van and into his chair. Kimbini's was the fanciest restaurant that Mum and Matthew could afford, which meant it was one step up from the 24-hour diner on the freeway. That didn't stop the owners from having delusions of grandeur. When we came through the door in our blood-stained finery, the two hostesses looked at us like the place was being invaded by rampaging vampires. "We have a reservation. Peterson, party of 10," my mother said calmly to the taller one, ignoring her horrified look. She stammered. "I'll be right back." She bolted, all long legs and short skirt, for the employees-only door. A few minutes later, she came back with a manager. "Mel, what happened? Are you okay?" he asked, looking at each of us. Sometimes it was good to have a mum who knew everybody in town. Mum told him about the accident as he pushed Dad's wheelchair to what was advertised as a banquet room in the back. It wasn't long before Matt and his girlfriend Sierra showed up. The manager must have told him what had happened because they hurried in straight to Mum. Matt squeezed her shoulder as they talked. To make it easy for the restaurant, everyone had the same food, institution style. Matthew and Sierra had barely sat down when a flurry of waitstaff arrived to pour iced tea and pass out sad dinner salads made of wilted lettuce and wedges of pink tomato. Everyone around me was chattering about something. Maybe the wreck, maybe Matt's graduation. I didn't know. I wasn't listening. I was thinking about her. Candace Harper. Candace, who lived two doors down from us. Candace, who has been my friend since we were three. Candace with the mysterious blue-green eyes and light brown hair. Candace with the pouty pink lips and gorgeous legs. Candace with the father, who was a police officer, with a gun collection. I suddenly noticed it had gotten quiet around me. Miranda burst into laughter. When I looked her way, she batted her eyelashes at me and said, "Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?" I kicked her under the table. It only made her laugh harder. Not my fault. You shouldn't mumble when you're daydreaming. The supper droids whisked away the mostly uneaten salads and brought out the main course. I pushed the gummy, overcooked pasta around on my plate. I just couldn't bring myself to eat it. I went back to thinking about Candace. It kept me from thinking about the new computer that I wouldn't be getting. The tap, tap, tap of silverware on a water glass wormed its way into my brain. Matthew and Sierra were standing up, looking giddy. Matthew said, "Everybody, I have an announcement." He paused to make sure everyone was looking. "I have asked Sierra to be my wife, and she is accepted." They made goo-goo eyes at each other. I rolled my eyes and snorted, even as I tried to imagine Candace making goo-goo eyes at me. Other members of the family applauded, and Morris hooted like he was at a basketball game or something. I golf-clapped and looked at Mum. Two tears raced each other down her cheeks. Was she crying for poor Sierra getting stuck with Matt, or because she was happy he's finally moving out of the house? Why do women cry when they're happy anyway? Dad hadn't calmed down. He was still twitching and his anxious eyes darted around the room. "I think we should get Morgan home," Mum said. In three bites, I gobbled down the half-frozen slice of cheesecake that appeared in place of my pasta. After all, nobody doesn't like Sara Lee. I stood up and had to sit right back down again. Suddenly the room spun and I had to hold on to the table. My chair seemed to be at a funny angle, and I didn't want to fall off. "Kai, are you all right?" Monica asked. "Yeah, just a little dizzy. No big deal." Put your head between your knees then, doofus, Miranda butted in. I felt like an idiot doing that. But when I did, the chair straightened out and the room stopped twirling. I took a deep breath and sat up. The room stayed in place. Mum looked at me. Then she turned and said something to Morris. He and Matt put Dad into the wheelchair and took him to the van. Guess I was too useless and weak. Maybe they would carry me to the car next. They didn't. But Matt and Sierra came to the house. Sometimes I really hated him. He was so perfect. Clean-cut, good-looking, just graduated top of his class, beautiful fiancé. He was so good, so wonderful, made me want to heave. He never got giant volcano zits. His eyes were airbrushed fashion model blue, not some weird brown-green mix like mine. He was built like a mixed martial artist. I was built like a cyclist, stringy and thin. I thought working at Redfern Garden Centre, fetching and carrying all day, would build me up. Didn't help. Sierra, Mum and my sisters sat around and talked about wedding stuff. My brothers talked about baseball. I was too tired and disgusted to stay up and chat, so I went to bed and slept like a dead man. The 6 o'clock alarm was a jackhammer on my throbbing head. The butterfly bandages were pulled tight against the crusty cuts on my forehead. Great. All I needed were some bolts coming out of my neck and I'd have looked like Frankenstein's monster. Not much point in taking a shower to go out and sweat, so I put on my work clothes and went to the bathroom to look for some headache pills. I went downstairs. No one was up but Mum. Seemed like she was always up. A cup of cold coffee sat on the kitchen table next to her. A neat little stack of stamped envelopes was in front of her. She was writing a check, and she looked up when I walked in. A purpley-black shiner, a souvenir from the wreck, underscored her left eye. I thought she looked like a running back. "Morning, Mordecai," she said, then yawned. I mumbled. Before Dad had had his stroke, she was a full-time stay-at-home mum. Before that, she was a horticulturist for the County Historical Society. It was her job to design and maintain the gardens at the Heritage Center with mostly native plants. I think she knew every flower that ever grew in Texas and every bug or bird that ever came anywhere near it. She tried to teach all this to her kids. She tried to spend time with each of us, but there were 7 of us. Someone always had ballet or gymnastics or football practice. Monica was her trusty stand-in, there when Mum wasn't. There just weren't enough hours in the day then, and there certainly weren't enough hours in the day for Mum to work 2 jobs, do Dad's physical therapy and doctor's visits, and pay attention to us. My brain knew it wasn't her fault, but it didn't stop me from feeling angry about it. Then I felt stupid for feeling that way. It was just easier to push her away and not deal with it. I grabbed a box from the counter and started pouring it into a bowl. "Mordecai, you might want to check..." "I'm in a rush, Mum. I don't want to be late for work," I interrupted her, pouring milk into the bowl. I wanted to ignore her before she could ignore me. "Okay, suit yourself." Why was she smiling when I'd just been so rude to her? I got a spoon and dug into the cereal. Only it wasn't cereal, it was cat food. "Bleh!" I spat it out on the floor. "Why didn't you say something?" I glared at Mum. "I tried, remember?" She started laughing. I hadn't heard her laugh in so long. On her way to put the coffee cup in the sink, she ruffled my hair, just like she used to when I was a kid. "I know it's been hard on you since your dad got sick. I appreciate how you've pitched in and not complained. I'm glad you're my son." She picked up her envelopes and walked out. Who knew? I stared after her, not knowing what to say. I cleaned up the cat food and inhaled a bowl of cereal, this time I checked, before I hopped on my bike and rode to work. Work at the garden centre was there. It was hot, it was dirty, and it was not over soon enough. Finally, when I went to the office to sign out, Mrs. McBride handed me a cheque. I stuffed it in my backpack and got on my bike. I rode home via the drive-up ATM at the bank to make a deposit. I wondered if I should put the $50 in the new computer fund. It didn't seem right, since there wouldn't be any new computer. But the insurance deductible had to get paid somehow, and now that Matt was moving out of the house, he'd probably be taking his money with him. On the upside, maybe Morris would move in with Mike, and it would just be Marcus and me in the room. I made the deposit. I was too tired to think about much as I pedaled home. I was almost there when I saw her. Candace was out in her front yard washing her big, hairy black dog. What was its name? Something to do with the History Channel. It had the same name as some tourist trap western town. Bisbee? Laramie? Bodie? That was it. "Hi, Candace. Are you washing Bodie, or is he washing you?" She was sopping wet, and so was her thin T-shirt. My pants suddenly didn't fit, and I was glad it was almost dark. "Ha ha, very funny." I caught the movement of the kitchen window curtain, and it dropped back into place. Candace's mum had been watching us, I guessed. She was the coolest mum ever. She was very hands-off, never kissed her daughter in public or that sort of thing. And she had a glass eye. So I did my best to sound casual and nonchalant. "I don't have to work tomorrow. You want to go to the mall and maybe catch a movie or something?" Candace stood there and stared at me with the hose running on her feet. "Are you asking me out on a date?" "No, no, of course not." "Oh, yes, you are. That's so sweet." I could hear a butt coming. "I'm not saying no. It's just I've got a lot going on right now. You know I've got regionals for track next week, and the whole prom thing on Saturday. I'm going with..." Forget I said anything. I turned around quickly. I could feel the hot blood rushing to my face, giving me away. I didn't want to know which knuckle-dragging football player she was going with. "Kai, wait," she called after me as I rode away, pretending not to hear her. She didn't follow me. At least at my house no one would notice me or my fire-red cheeks. I trudged upstairs and took a shower. I didn't trust myself to be alone. No thoughts of Candace were allowed in my head, not even her in a wet T-shirt that clung to her. "Stop! Stop it! Forbidden!" If I'd thought about that, I would think about her parting with another guy. I tromped downstairs. "Mordecai, your friend Steve called for you about 15 minutes ago," Mum said. "Thanks," I muttered. I called him up. Steve, at least, was safe. We'd even been blood brothers for about a year, ever since that afternoon when we'd found the body. Confessions of a Troll by Artemis Greenleaf. www.artemisgreenleaf.com. This work is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. If you'd like to leave a comment for Artemis Greenleaf or learn more about the other projects in progress, please go to www.artemisgreenleaf.com.